is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of comic books that have come out today, Wednesday, and one book that does not come out today, Wednesday.
Guess which one it is.
Oh man.
Or are you going to tell them?
I don't know. Maybe we should make them guess.
That would be fun. That's like a quiz. It's easy to solve.
You can just check the information and check it out, and you'll find out. But let's get into it. Big issue, hotly anticipated issue. Been looking forward to it for years at this point.
Yes.
From Marvel Comics, The War of the Realms. Number one, this is from Jason Aaron and Russell Dodderman.
Yes.
They worked on a very long run on Thor. They've been leading up to this forever. Finally, the forces of Malekith, the Dark Elf, have reached Earth. They've reached Midgard. They are attacking the entire Marvel Universe. Everything that he's been writing in Thor and various other series for years now is coming to bear. Very excited that Russell Dodderman is on it as well. Did an amazing job on Thor. But what did you think about this issue? So much buildup was leading up to this. Was it worth it?
Well, what I think is the buildup makes it feel big, as opposed to a lot of crossovers, specifically from Marvel, where it feels a little bit dashed off. And the stories, I'm not saying the stories are bad, but it feels like, is this super big and important? And this feels big. And this first issue, we get start with the characters we would expect, but we get to see some characters we didn't expect, like the gun guy. What's his name?
Mr. Guns.
That's it, Mr. Guns. No,
Mr.
I think
Guns.
It's Mr.
It's
Guns.
It's Mr. Guns.
Dr. Guns?
Dr. Guns. Well, he got a doctorate in guns. I do remember that issue.
His whole thing is guns. Why would gun not be in his name?
Right. Guys.
Oh, is it? No, maybe it's the Gunisher?
Oh, that's a cool.
Yeah, you're going to strangle both of you
that's
out.
That's a good idea.
Listen, first off, Alex, let me answer your question properly. Yes.
Oh, good. Okay, good.
Yeah.
That's concise podcasting.
Yeah. huge issue. So, and it feels huge throughout. It just, I think it does a great job of like slowly kind of having everything unfold in a way that is not only fun, but you can follow what's happening. I loved every second of it, and especially the Punisher part. I giggled like a little schoolgirl.
What did you think when Thor was like, God, I'm trusting you for the last time, Loki? Were you like, cool.
That's typical Thor, right?
Yeah.
So one thing structurally that I thought was interesting, it's not exactly slow getting into it, but there are several introductions to the issue.
Yes.
Each one
getting better and better.
Well, they're all good. Like, they're all well done.
Yeah,
they're
why
all
are
well
you
drawn.
Shitting on this
Hold
right
on,
he's not.
Calm
he's
down.
Just naming them.
I'm saying there's a rundown of all of the realms, of the, not Asgardian realms, but all of the realms of the Asgardian mythology.
All ten of them.
Then we get a recap page of what happens so far, then we find out what's happened so far. So it's a lot of intro. So if you haven't been picking up these books, it's certainly like an info dump right at the beginning. But then the second half of the issue is straight up action, and it builds really, really well. In particular, this is definitely a big spoiler time, but I do want to talk about this because these series of pages were so incredibly laid out by Russell Dodderman. Loki is, first of all, not actually Loki. Loki is Malekith tricking Thor to keep him off the board so that he can't save Midgard from their attack, because Thor, of course, is going to be key to saving everybody.
I think he
so.
Might be essential.
I'm going to throw that out there.
That's Hammer, Dr. Hammer.
But the real Loki comes down, takes out his father, Laufey, and chops off his hand, talks to his mother, Freya. He's betrayed Freya many, many times before, and Freya's like, how can I trust you? And there's this amazing close-up panel of Loki saying, because of what's about to happen.
Yeah.
Loki knows what's about to happen. What's about to happen is we get not an actual full-page spread, but most of the page is what happens to Loki, and underneath it is everybody reacting to it as Laufey, his father, eats Loki.
Yeah.
And it's horrifying.
Yeah.
Absolutely horrifying.
Crunchy.
I mean, granted,
crunchy.
Very
he's
crunchy.
Not dead, right?
Yeah.
Because it's Loki.
He's inside the mouth.
Sure. I'm just saying, we're supposed to think he's dead, but also, A, it's Loki, and B, he knew this was going to happen. So, he's certainly
not
figured
dead.
Out. Right,
he's got a scam.
He's got a scam.
But the way that it's laid
out, the way that it's executed is so good.
I mean, across the board, Russell Dodderman's art is just so
good.
It's amazing. Especially since he hasn't been on Thor for a little bit, like coming back on it in this way is so awesome.
I'd like to go back to a key part that I don't think we're talking about enough. The way that the Punisher is drawn is just so...
Sorry, Dr. Guns? Is that the character you're talking about?
The way the Punisher is drawn is just so fantastic. Punisher. And then also Jason Aaron does a great job of capturing the Punisher's voice in such a fun way as he's jumping out the window shooting. It was just so beautiful.
Yeah. So he's trying to... This so Punisher... Beautiful. Punish the Frost Giants? Yes, is right. That what he's
sort of, if he's a Punisher, he's like, it's like a vice principal type character.
Also, right, what I kind of like...
Is it like that show on HBO?
No. Oh. Also, what I like about the kind of his plan...
Sorry, I'm talking about Big Little Lies.
Yeah.
Nobody cares. what's nice about his plan is he was like, oh, I'll put Thor with all these Frost Giants, and then we'll attack Midgard. But what's cool is if Thor fucks up all those Frost Giants, he won't have a second wave of Frost Giants to attack Midgard. So that plan could backfire. Thor's got enough hammers to take out a bunch of Frost Giants.
But they're all bad. They're not great hammers. They're medium-sized hammers.
Right. He went down to the Ace Hardware, picked up a bunch of hammers.
Still Thor with a hammer. I don't care, you know, if it's not the best hammer. It's still
going to
be.
No, if anyone can pick up that hammer, you need to be a hammer with a discerning handle. Like, are you worthy? Sure. You go to Ace Hardware, you can pick up all those hammers, except for the one they keep in the back.
Yeah. By the way, this episode is brought to you by Ace Hardware.
Ace Hardware. Get hammer.
Very confusing slogan. Don't worry
about
it.
It is confusing, but I like it.
Yeah. This issue is great. It's beautifully drawn, as we talked about. It's very exciting. Also, a great Spider-Man in here. Really fun jokes with the old Spider-Man throughout. This is just the beginning of this thing, and it's only going to get bigger from here, but I'm excited to see how it gets executed.
Also, you know, there's been so much build up to this. I think it really delivers in a way that makes it kind of worth the wait and has like the posters that we've seen and everything really pay off nicely.
I would argue I don't think we're quite there yet.
You don't think this is the payoff?
No, because we're in the first issue of this thing, and when you get to the back, there's this checklist where it's like, War of the Realms, first act, here's 30 issues you need to read. Yeah. Which is great. You know, I'm a lifelong comic book fan. I'm all in on a massive crossover, so let's do this.
Yeah.
But this is not the slam bang issue. This is the prelude. This is kicking it off, and it's only going to get bigger from here, which is the exciting part for me.
Yeah.
Okay. You think it's downhill from here, Pete?
Yeah, it's all downhill.
I mean, to be
fair. Because it's going to suck for a while.
Punisher, Giant Eating a Tiny. Like, those are two big hits for
sure.
Pete.
Yeah. I guess so. All right, moving on to another storytelling issue. The Storyteller, Sirens, number one from Boom Studios.
Oh man,
I love this book.
Loved this
so
book.
So good. The Storyteller, one of my favorite series back in the day. It was one half of the Jim Henson Hour. John Hurt was the storyteller, would tell these very classic stories with not exactly a dark twist, but like a family-friendly dark twist is, I guess, the way to put it.
Lightly dark. But that's what I liked about it. Like many fairy tales, you got to have a little... edge to them.
Right.
It
gave them back. I think it was a response to the Disney stuff. It was giving it a sense of those Grimm's fairy tales, and that's what they do in this book. It's amazing.
Really good. The way the art in this is drawn so expressively, the conversation between the storyteller and his dog, where he's like really getting after the dog to teach him a lesson, which I love that.
Yeah.
It's great. It really took me back to being a kid watching the Jim Henson
Hour. For those of you who don't know what's going on in the book, there is this storyteller, the titular storyteller. Talking dog wants a bunch of snacks. And to teach him a lesson, he tells him a story about a man who becomes enamored with a siren and becomes so enamored with the siren, he starts to forget about his family. And it's dark and it's sad and it does teach the dog a lesson. But to Justin's point,
a new trick.
Yes. Yeah, so beautifully drawn. What do you think about it, Pete?
I was real impressed. I liked it. I thought it was very creative. And I feel like you should put out a book similar to this where you're talking to Pip. You know, and telling Pip stories.
For those of you who don't know, I have a dog named Pip whose popularity seems to be superseding my own. I'll tell you what, I don't like that.
I love
a lot of people talk about my dog like
you are.
I'm fine.
Your dog.
I'm the dog's master. So the dog is, you know, it's we have a relationship. It's not going to be popular, and it's fine. It shouldn't make me feel weird. But
by the way, if you want to follow Justin's dog on Twitter, JT at JT Pipper.
Yeah. Oh man,
JT Pipper.
He just got verified.
Yeah. Oh wow.
Blue check mark.
Sorry about that. All right, next one we're going to talk about, DC Comics Justice League number 21. This is continuing the storyline where the Justice League seems to be in a utopia. Guess what? Not quite a utopia.
Not a utopia. As we talked about on the show last week, name a utopia that doesn't get fucked up eventually. And here we are in this Justice League issue where it all goes down. I'm surprised Batman wasn't a little more on top of his shit.
Right?
Yeah.
It's fucked up. He's the utopia. He's the dystopia sniffer.
What sucks?
He's like the Pip of the Justice League.
What sucks is in the last issue, he was like, it's too bright here. I don't fucking like it. And this one, he's got his mask off. He's having
he's
tea.
Chilling.
He's cold chilling. I was like, whose Batman is this? This isn't my Batman.
Batman's lost a step.
Oh, wow. You watch
I
your
I think
mouth.
That's it for Batman.
Yeah.
I
you
think
watch
Batman
your goddamn
this
mouth.
This guy's too old. He just wanted to settle down, be married. They got fucked up. Now he's out.
Yeah. What did you think about this issue, though? How are you feeling about this arc so far?
I like the stakes that it's really representing. I think it's very interesting and creative. And it's a real fun dilemma that they're in. And I say fun because it's like, I don't know where they're going to go or how they're going to solve it, but I really like the characters that they're having this kind of quagmire, if you will. But it's just Ooh. Really kind of interesting, and I'm very excited to see how this unfolds.
I like this a lot, too. It's a little, it's hectic. The storytelling is fast. The issue a couple back where we slowed down and had that Lex Luthor Martian Manhunter story, I was really liked that because that let the story breathe, let the characters breathe a little bit. This one is back paced up, and I do like it, but I do want to be able to digest it a little harder.
Yeah, I can see that. This is definitely back to being an info dump issue.
Yeah.
But it adds so much to the mythology of the DC Universe. And I felt like I've been having a hard time grasping onto all the information that they're putting in there, all the things they're adding onto the mythology. But I felt like this issue really opened it up quite a bit.
Yeah.
And without explaining things explicitly, certainly pointed to where they're going that... My guess at this point is it seems like Scott Snyder and company are trying to explain crises, like trying to explain why things keep getting rebooted in the DC universe, which is a classic DC move. Like they're always like, we're going to do these crises because we're going to clean everything up, make it simpler. 2 years later, okay, here's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Here we go. But I'm along for the ride. You know, I think like this is a spoiler, but they introduce a brother to the Monitor and the Anti-Monitor here, which is...
The World Forger.
World Forger. Very interesting stuff.
Yeah.
I like this character. I'm curious to see what they're going to do with him because he doesn't necessarily seem good or evil. He certainly seems to be straddling that.
Yeah.
They're heading towards something. I mean, if you've been reading Justice League Odyssey, there's this whole plan that Darkseid has to take the Ghost Sector, which is the planets that were released by Brainiac, back at Justice League, No Justice, and turn them into a new enormous apocalypse. That's where they end up on at the end of this issue. So it does all seem to start to be tying together into this greater tapestry. That's always very cool.
Yeah, Scott Snyder does a great job of just... of the creativity he puts in, he's forging his own world. He's the World Forger with this title. And just able to... tell these huge stories that really put the Justice League in a losing position.
Now that you mention it, that character kind of does look like Scott Snyder.
Yeah, very similar.
Yeah, he's a big blue elf, man.
Yeah.
In case you never met him in person, that's exactly what he looks like. All right, moving on to another one. This one, I'm not going to say when it's coming out, but it's coming out April 24th.
That's a big clue.
Yes. Riverdale Season 3, Number 2. This is from Archie Comics. This is the book that ties into the overall series. Riverdale tells untold stories and ties into the tapestry of the plot. This issue, the stuff that we can tell you, one of the things is we finally get to see the Shoney road trip.
Fun.
We see Cheryl and Tony on the road trip that they took over the summer, get some more information about that. And the other thing that we get information is we see Polly and Jason and how their story ties it to the farm, which is something that was teased and talked about on the very last episode of Riverdale. So it's very interesting to get more information about that.
Yeah, and it really fleshes out the story in a way. And honestly, seeing this issue, there's a redhead and a blonde together, sort of like an Archie and a Betty type character. And I'll tell you.
What are you talking about?
There's a great shot of this redhead and a blonde character together.
What are you getting at?
I'm saying
wouldn't
it be great if like a redheaded character and a blonde character got together on the TV show Riverdale?
You have
your Jason, your Polly, but what about like another version of that? You know, I'm talking about like a Betty and an Archie, hypothetically.
Oh, well, that's awful. No, I don't think that would ever happen.
Okay. Nope.
Yeah.
What did you think about this issue, Pete?
I love this issue. I thought it was a lot of fun. It really feels like an extension of Riverdale, which I really like. There's so much fun, so much adventure. I felt like they drew them in such a great way. It feels like they're really pulled right out of Riverdale and put into comic book form. I was really impressed with it.
Yeah, I actually like this issue a lot better even than the first one, which I also enjoyed. But the first one felt kind of like larks. It felt like, oh, here's some additional tales coming out of Riverdale.
Yep.
This one, to Justin's point, really fleshed out a lot of information about the series, which is really cool. And that's what I'd like to see more of going forward. We'll definitely see.
More flesh.
Yeah, more flesh in general. Just like a big bags of it.
That's what Alex said, dude. Flesh.
Oh, stop being weird.
There we go. All right, moving on to another book. This is a Image Comics book, Section Zero, number one. This is about a secret society existing outside the fringes who investigates weird mysteries. They don't exist, and neither are the things that they investigate.
Yeah, wow, neither that's do the a lot to cover, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. This is by Carl Kessel with art by Tom Grummet. I kind of love this book.
Really?
Yes. I thought it's very purposely old school. All of the characters are exactly what you think they're going to be. There's a tough dude wearing a jacket and a bunch of spandex with a sword. Yeah. There's a cool girl wearing, what would you say? Also spandex.
Yeah.
And they used to be married. That's one of the fun details of the thing.
The alien's my favorite character.
There's an alien that pilots their ship.
Seems like a child.
There's a bug dude that has powers. It's just a fun setup.
His name is the 24-hour bug.
Yeah. Again, very old school, but purposely old school. And I enjoyed it. Like, it felt like a good pilot to me, you know?
Interesting.
You did not like it.
No, but I mean, it is pinpointed in, like, it feels like it came out in, like, July 1989. So if that was, like, a hot time period for you and you want to, like, really relive the past, which is a theme in perhaps maybe another book we're going to talk about in this stack, then read this. If you're looking for some, like, new form of storytelling, not here.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's not really part of my childhood because I was born in 2011, but...
That's true.
Otherwise, I went too far forward.
Yeah, you went too far forward. Fuck, that means you're eight.
Dude.
Put that beer down.
Whatever, man.
Put your lollipop back in.
My parents are God. It's cool. I can do whatever I want.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Like, it's definitely a throwback, but I think it's an enjoyable throwback. Again, versus the one that we're going to talk about later in the stack, which maybe we could talk about right now.
Yeah, we could.
To me, this feels like nostalgia in the right way.
Yeah, I think it's the characters are fun. They're kind of having an adventure. I thought it was... Yeah, it's not the most original story, but I thought it was a cool storytelling, and it flowed well, which I appreciated. The art is fantastic. You know, you don't always have to reinvent the wheel. Sometimes you can just write a good story with some good characters.
See the wheel.
Yeah, and it's Carl Kessel and Tom Grummet, who are a classic artist-writer duo.
I wish the people listening at home could have seen your face when you said that day, when you were like, 2011.
I knew I was wrong when I said it. All right, let's move to the other one. This is from Marvel Comics. Major X, number one, bringing Rob Liefeld back to the X-Men franchise.
Where the fuck has he been?
He's been in Daredevil Deadpool
been in
movies.
Daredevil?
Big spoiler from Pete. Also, not true. So not spoiling too much. He's been in Florida a lot.
Yes. So this is Rob Liefeld writing and drawing an X-Men issue, introducing a new character, masked character named Major X, kicks X-Force's butt from the era that Rob Liefeld is best known for.
If you were just in 1989, let's dial the knob forward to 1991, which is where this book will take you back to.
Yeah, I don't know. I was born in 2011, so it's not
really.
Yes, that's
true.
Like,
this is all confusing.
This is very, I don't know.
God, you have such supple flesh.
Please, don't ever tell an 8-year-old they have supple flesh.
I'm telling you.
Oh, okay.
You do the math. And Rob Liefeld, it brings back all your favorites are back. First panel, Shatterstar. later in the book, Deadpool. Then there's another Deadpool.
Right.
Then Deadpool, you got Cable wearing a weird vest.
Right.
Gray Beast.
And there's an evil Deadpool named Dreadpool who has shoulder pads, and Deadpool's like, nice shoulder pads, which is like, I don't know, it's like Rob Liefeld writing Rob Liefeld fan fiction is what it feels like at some point.
It's like a snake eating its own tail, and also a snake because it doesn't have feet.
Yeah. What did you think about this? I feel like if anybody is most likely to like this book, it's you, Pete.
No, I hate it.
Oh,
really?
No.
You hate it? Because I'll say, like, I didn't hate it. If it's exactly what it is. It's Rob Liefeld. The reveal at the end is a very Liefeldian thing to do. Like, this was hit the marks, and I was nostalgic for this a little bit.
What did you think, Pete?
What did you hate?
I didn't
about?
Like the art. It was driving me nuts.
You know the art.
Yeah,
it's Rob Liefeld.
Yeah.
That's actually, I would say, the one part of the issue for me where I was like, yep, that's Rob Liefeld. Yeah. Right? Drawing some Wolverine, jumping at people, punching them instead of stabbing them with their claws.
Yeah.
This dude is masked and invulnerable, and everybody is so sharp, and all of that felt like
time travel.
Yeah.
I didn't.
Bunch of stuff that doesn't really make any sense about alternate dimensions.
This art drives me insane.
Really?
Wow.
Wow. Huh. Well, I would say this is not my cup of tea, but if you are a Rob Liefeld fan, to your point, you know what you're getting into.
Yeah, it's a major X.
All right. Next one we're going to talk about, this is from Image Comics' Curse Words Spring Special. This is a big one for fans of Curse Words. We zoom back in time to find out what happened after Wizard and Ruby
Stitch.
This
is like the origin story we haven't gotten, like 30-some issues deep. And
it's crazy.
Now we get the origin.
We find out who Margaret is, what happened with her, why she was changed into a koala and other
creatures. This changes everything.
Yeah. What'd you think? You're the big Curse Words fan on the show.
This really blew my mind. It was really unbelievable. And it's crazy to me that it took this long to get this story because
that's nice. That's like,
great, but it's like, man, that really affects how everything else is read moving forward. And I
and backwards.
Yeah. Because it's like, I was like, oh, I should go back and read this now. Cause it changes, like, just seeing Wizard with Margaret so much. And now he's not with Margaret. It's like, oh my God, this is so crazy. But it's also so much more heartbreaking.
It really is. I mean, I think what Charles Soule and Ryan Brown have done with this issue is infused it with so much more emotion. The series started being not callous necessarily, but a little snarky, little rude, a little in your face.
And he maintains that tone with a lot of this, but he just adds this underbelly of like real emotional heartbreak.
Oh, man. And there's a huge reveal about the title of the series as well, which was fantastic. This is great.
Yeah.
So good. How'd you feel about this, Justin?
Yeah, I feel like this was nice because it really showed off Charles's ability to like, it seems like with this series, he just threw a bunch of stuff on the table and like sort of was having fun, feeling carefree. And then I don't know what his process was with it, but it feels like with this, he's just been marinating on it and thinking and was like, oh, here's the way to add the heart that I feel like the book has been missing. And then he sewed it all up in a nice way.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue, I think it was probably elements of that were there all along, but it's definitely developed in that direction.
Yeah.
And as it's revealed more information about the end game of the book, and we are only a couple of issues away, if you haven't been reading this series, definitely go back before you read this one. But so good.
Also, and maybe we had a guest artist, Mike Norton, on this.
Oh, okay. Oh, Mike Norton.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, yay.
We know him. And maybe this will, our love of this book will prompt Charles to finally release the audio of us doing a live stage reading of the first issue of Curse Words when we did the Comic-Con on a cruise ship.
Yeah, there you go. Hashtag it. Tweet it at Charles Soule. Release the tapes.
Yeah.
No explanation.
He'll get what that means. No, don't say anything else. Just release the tapes.
Release the tapes.
Last one we're going to talk about. This is another one from Boom Studios. This is one of their Boombox titles. Rocko's Modern Afterlife, number one. This is taking the series Rocko's Modern Life, mix it in zombies. Were either of you guys a fan of Rocko's Modern Life?
Yeah, I liked some Rocko's Modern Life.
Yeah.
Old school Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
You wouldn't understand it because you're so young and supple. But I don't think maybe not a lot of people know about this, but this book is wild. It's got, like, it's sort of very negative.
Yeah.
I I was trying to rack my brains and go back and remember Rocko's Modern Life a little bit reading this, but it basically takes all the characters and kills them.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, the Rocko's Modern Life was just like fun adventures, sort of right next door to like Rugrats. Rocko's a wallaby, heifer's
he
a cow.
He was nervous, right?
Yeah, he's Rocko? Nervous.
Yeah. So he gets nervous in here, but he stays inside during a zombie apocalypse, and slowly all of his friends get turned into zombies. Pretty upsetting.
Yeah, and it's a lot of like, the modern world sucks. Don't you get it? In this book.
Yeah.
But because he's just like, you know, just meditating, and he has no phone, no computer, everything's all blocked. He doesn't know the zombie apocalypse is happening.
No, he knows it's happening. He's just sort of blocking himself off.
Which I think he's come to he comes to regret.
He does. Yeah, this was an interesting, weird one. I think if you're a fan of Rocko's Modern Life, maybe check it out just because there are some solid jokes in it, and it is a strange riff. It certainly gets going by the end, but if you didn't know Rocko's Modern Life, maybe not for you.
It has the vibe of like if you don't like a lot of things that have happened in the world since Rocko's Modern Life, you'll like this book because it's definitely taking down like Twitch for a long portion of it.
Which you love.
Yeah.
You're on Twitch like 24/7.
Exactly.
Playing Anthem.
That's true. I am doing that.
What name one element of Anthem?
Headset.
Nope.
Wearing a headset?
Not, probably. Yeah. All right, guys. If you want to support the show, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater Loft in New York. Come on down. We'll chat with you about comic books. Pete, what else do you want to plug?
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know about the amazing guests we have on our live show.
Follow us on Twitter @comicbooklive.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. And we'll see you at the comic book shop.